Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome back to Small Caps. My name is Kerry Stevenson, and today we're going to be talking about uranium. And there's been a fresh wave of optimism washing across the world as the uranium price starts to rise and people are starting to get a little bit interested. Australia's next uranium producer will be Boss Energy. The ASX code, ladies and gentlemen, is BOE. Write that down. They've got the Honeymoon Project in South Australia. Joining me today is their Managing Director and CEO, Duncan Crabe. Duncan, great to see you. What's going on out there? Looks like uranium's having a bit of a turn on the good side.
It really is having a turn. Thank you, Kerry. It's wonderful to see you again, and thank you for having me back on the show. Wow, what a month. It was only a short time ago I was presenting at Diggers and Dealers saying, recalling what it was like back in 2006 to 2010. In the last uranium boom, and sort of explaining that when prices move, it can be sudden and violent. And here we are, within the space of sort of a month, the prices have risen to $39 per pound. Terribly
exciting. For those that have not been watching, let's just go how much that's risen by in the last month.
Well, in the last month, it's risen from $33 per pound to $39 per pound. Significant increase, and that's the sign of a really bullish market. And there are many reasons for that.
What do you think is pushing this? And is it, look, at the end of the day, the spot price of uranium versus the long term contract price, are the long term contract prices also moving in the same direction?
Really good question. At the moment, no. Slightly, they're catching up. But that's the big elephant in the room. What we now need to see is the utilities coming out and going into more general contracting, which is yet to occur. So at the moment, there's really only one buyer in the room, and that's what's waking the industry up, being the Sprott Uranium Participation Corp. Commodity trust. So I can share with you a bit on that, on the history of that and what's driving it. But yeah, that's a really pertinent question. What we now need to see is general contracting, utilities coming out, but we expect that that's going to happen. And that's what's really exciting. It took a trust vehicle that the acronym they use is called SPUT, to really come into the market, give it a shake. And that's what's giving rise. The market's thin.
What do you mean by a trust vehicle when you say that this is this spot?
Well, if I take it back a step, I mean, the event that's basically had the most significant impact on the market since the junior mines back in quarter one, such as ourselves, started buying physical inventory, is Sprott, and it did an acquisition of the Uranium Participation Corp, basically an investment fund that holds physical uranium. So with this acquisition, the newly formed Uranium Trust, which acronym they use is SPUT, is listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange in Canada. And what they're looking to do now, they basically are raising funds to buy physical uranium. The next step that they're going to do is dual list on the New York Stock Exchange. And when that happens, it will be the first physical uranium fund traded in the US. And the indicated mandate that they have to raise financing is $1 billion to buy physical uranium. And it's simply not there in the market. So that's what they're out on a big buying spree, trying to buy physical uranium. It's simply not there. So as a result, the price is rising. I think it's rising so much that the utilities, going back to what we were saying, they're yet to wake up. They're yet to really pay that higher incentive price that's required, but it'll come.
Well, it sounds like it will, because if the Sprott one can't go out into the market and buy uranium and it's not there, then surely that will get those utilities to start to sit up and say, well, hang on a minute, where's our supply? And is there really no supply in the market at the moment?
There's supply, but it's just at these higher prices. So a lot of the sellers are now holding back, going, whoa, prices are rising. We're just going to ease back before we release. But the thing to bear in mind, and sort of as bullish as I feel, you know, just to also be cognizant that while there's this continued purchasing by buyer's foot and it's having such a positive effect on the market by sequestering that significant quantities and strengthening the price, I think we can expect also, or just be aware that there may be some volatility, until more buyers enter the market. And it's something to bear in mind. But certainly our read on the market is that most of the activity has been spot, trader, intermediary type front. And there's been some buying and selling by the Kazatomprom trading arm, but that's nothing unusual. So I would say most of the buying is spot, but it's very significant as it's actually taking physical uranium out of the market. It's not being released to the utilities. And that's waking utilities up. So utilities are now keeping a close eye on the market, which they're yet to enter. And, you know, we're aware that some of the more progressive utilities, the fuel buyers themselves, are talking with plans with their executive, ready to see that if prices keep rising, they'll need to act and come into the market. Others are taking a more relaxed sort of approach, watching it with keen interest, waiting to see how this vehicle plays out. But going back to, with Sput looking to dual list on the New York Stock Exchange and that aggressive capital raise, we can expect quite an exciting period.
But do you think there's also going to be an exciting period because as people start to wake up to the fact that uranium is nothing to be feared about uranium, it's a zero carbon energy source and it's going to be good for the planet. I mean, what's your view on that one, Duncan?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I just think like the second quarter of this year has been really focused on that rollout of COVID vaccine programs, maintaining a safe working environment and within the industry. And, you know, what COVID's effectively taught us is that reliance on a limited number of jurisdictions and a limited number of producers is a really unwise strategy. So it's really opening the utilities' minds to say, don't just be reliant on one or two countries for production. Yeah. And then you look more broadly. I mean, this year the world has experienced severe global climate-related events, highlighting the urgent need to maintain and develop, you know, the deployment of safe, base, low carbon free sources of energy. And that's where nuclear steps in. So when we consider like the International Energy Authority sort of recent report, Net Zero by 2050, it outlines sort of the recommendations and pathway of how do you get there? Mm. And already we're seeing countries around the world trying to codify that. So by that, I mean, if we look at the US, the UK, South Korea, Japan, for example, they're committing to those goals by 2050, China for that matter, by 2060. Mm-hmm. I mean that awakening is resonating well, particularly with some of the younger generations who are acutely aware of it. Mm. And we just need to be proactive. So, yeah.
Well, I'm pretty excited because I love your macro views because you really do understand this space very well, but you're also the managing director and CEO of Boss Energy. So I want to get into who is Boss. Give me a quick overview and then let's talk about this week's announcement.
Yeah, of course. So Boss Energy, we're the 100% owners of the Honeymoon Uranium Mine. It's a proven mine that previously produced and exported uranium around the world. It went into care and maintenance due to low uranium prices back in 2014. And since then, we've kept it in very good sort of care and maintenance program and fully in compliance with environmental permits, such that we've been able to retain the export permit to sell uranium worldwide when we restart operations. Yeah. So we're one of four only export permits of uranium within Australia. We're located in the premier uranium jurisdiction of South Australia within Australia. South Australia's got the only producing uranium mines in Australia, being Olympic Dam and the Beverley Heathgate operation, which is some 260 kilometres to our west. So really, since taking the position on, our team has progressed technically the plant. So the uranium price has been in the doldrums, but what we've managed to do is sort of like a campaign style of addressing some of the technical innovations that are needed to bring a company into the market at these low commodity prices and expand the geological resource. So fortuitously, events are now catching up with us, and And we're well prepared. We're really well prepared to enter this new market.
So let's talk about this week's announcement about what you're doing, because you've fully permitted, your feasibility study is complete. Let's talk about this week's announcement, because there's, I'll tell you one thing, Duncan, you've been busy, timing the market well.
No, thank you. Thanks, Kerry. I mean, essentially, that's right. So as you go through the stages of a mining project, from your scoping study, preliminary feasibility study, and then your definitive feasibility study, the next step in the cycle is called FEED, or that front-end engineering work. Typically, companies will wait until they get that first contract or they start the cycle, and arrange the finance, and then go out to like an EPCM, engineering procurement design management type arrangement with a third party. What we've done is slightly different to that. What we've done is really taken those skills and built our owners team such that we can do this ourselves, or a significant portion of that ourselves. And what's really the key takeaway with that is those personnel then transition to when the operation starts producing. So you retain that talent that's actually taken care of the build into the operations, rather than a turnkey approach where a third party will say, here are the keys, you guys run with it. So that's really the purpose of highlighting to the market, really just how advanced we're going with that particular work. It's cementing our position as Australia's next uranium producer, and we're well ahead of schedule.
When are you expecting to as they say in the theatre, turn the lights on?
It's a good question. I mean, really, what we're waiting for is that uranium price to lift, such that we deliver significant returns to shareholders. There's no use with sort of destroying a resource at low uranium prices. What we also need to be cognizant of is going back to our earlier conversation, is that, yeah, spot prices are running, but what we need to see is a sustainable market with term contracts coming into play. That's what gives us the confidence. So it's important to bear in mind that when you enter into a contract in uranium, it's typically minimum for a three-year period, can be up to 7 or 10 years. So the barriers of entry into uranium mining are far easier than the barriers to exit. Once you enter that contract, by hook and crook, you're in. Whereas you can't just exit, you're obliged to honour it. So the way we combat that is we look at market-related contracts that will rise with the market, but we're being very careful as to when we step into the market. And you know, it's a key point. So internally, our approach has really been two-pronged. We want to be ready. We want to have that first mover advantage. We're advancing this FEED work against the backdrop of a rising uranium price. We think we've timed it really well. We're positioning to start detailed design work and order long lead items early in the new year if prices continue to rise and we can lock in high offtake. If not, fine. We've done the work on the back of a feasibility study. But it's this team, building the team, that's so critical to have that ability to do it. The human resources in uranium mining, last mine built was Husab, which I was on, and that's Jeremy right. Jeremy Robertson, our process manager, was on building the NIM6 column. So, we commissioned that mine in 2016. The expertise, I think a lot of available expertise in the last uranium mining boom has been sucked out of the industry. They're off lithium, gold, iron ore, all the other commodities, which are also flying. So it's been really important to grab that person up.
And you've got the team, they're ready to go, and you've got a process, a way of doing that. And that's the mine behind you, I believe, isn't it?
It's the mine behind us. That's the honeymoon mine. Absolutely. I mean, we recently flew across and went over there, and my just talking on the team, our project manager has just joined us, Jonathan Owen, as I've explained. I mean, what a coup. I mean, his extensive global experience overseeing multi-billion-dollar mine builds for First Quantum, including the African Sentinel copper nickel project in Zambia, more recently the Cobra copper gold processing plant in Panama, and then working alongside Wyatt Buck. And Wyatt Buck I think I introduced in the last program. I mean, he significant global experience with Cameco, 15 years culminating as the executive GM of McArthur River and the Key Lake Mill. You know, they're significant flagship mines for Cameco, then headhunted to Paladin, where he oversaw the construction and achieving nameplate of the Langer Heinrich mine. So you've really got, within just those two guys, some significant experience. Add on my colleague Jeremy Trevor Robinson from Namibia. You've got Jeremy Green as in your civils. I mean, Merrill Ford, who designed the original design work of NIM6 columns. Big, big team. So we took a few of these guys to site quite recently. And if I can show you on the map behind. So this is a map of Honeymoon. And just put simply, the site layout, it works. It previously worked in the last boom. But what we're doing is, if you can see this, the solvent extraction columns. So two big columns. We're replacing those with the ion exchange columns, exactly the same footprint.
Hang on, Duncan, what does that mean? What does that mean, those columns, when you're replacing them? What does that mean?
Okay, so ion exchange columns is basically the new method that we're introducing. The whole point of the enhanced feasibility study was to prove that we could replace this front end of the processing plant in its entirety. Ion exchange accounts for about 55% of the world's supply of uranium. All the Kazakhstan operations, for example, use ion exchange, and it is the most efficient, cheapest form of production. So that's why we did it. It lowers your operating costs and it allows greater throughput of production. So
that makes sense.
So that's the front end of the plant. We're also going to enhance the groundwater treatment plant. And finally, we're going to increase enhance the calcined kiln in the drying circuit, such that we can burn the organics and material at a higher heat to produce a superior yellowcake. And that's what conversion facilities around the world are chasing, a far higher product. So it's relatively, if you just consider, they're the three main angles that we're changing. The rest of the site, it's there. The well fields that we're starting are here. Those well fields operated in the previous mine. They're established. They're ready to go. And that's the highest grade part of the Honeymoon resource, sitting adjacent to the plant, ready to go for the first 3-4 years. So we feel very confident with this asset. And I think that confidence is why you can attract the caliber of a Wyatt or a John Owen as such. They see it. It's not another fancy feasibility study or resource build. This is real.
I really appreciated you going to show us what was what and where, because I'm a visual person, and just to see how much there is there and how much infrastructure is already in place, you know, for potential investors to see that. You know, there's not going to be massive amounts of spend because the infrastructure, a lot of it is already there and ready to go.
Absolutely. And that's the key thing. And being so close to Broken Hill, we get our power off the grid.
Oh,
and
wow.
One aspect a lot of mining operations in Australia struggle with is that power supply. We've got it.
What about water?
Water we've got too. Huge groundwater reservoir. And access to road, to rail, it really is, we're very, very fortunate. And I think that's why I sincerely believe that it's restart projects that have that advantage going into this new market, because they can move quickly, they can have that first mover advantage. We're absolutely critical. I mean, to take a greenfield project in uranium, go through the permitting, do the technical studies, and get the expertise to actually management team to run those, it can take 8 to 10 years on average. So
So going back to a question I asked earlier, Duncan, when, like you said, that you're waiting for the uranium price to get higher, what if it stays at this level?
If it stays at this level, we're going to we'll have to watch it. I think the likelihood is it's going to increase. If it stays at this level, I would be saying to our shareholders that at the end of this year, or certainly early next year, excuse me, we would have been in a position, having advanced our feed work, having completed our feasibility studies, that it really is primed and ready to go. It's a question of when that price rises. And I know, because we're talking to utilities, that we're being looked at and engaged with. So it's just a question of time. If that time is a little bit longer, we know the fundamentals, as we've just discussed, it will happen. It's just a question of time. But the thing is, for us, is being best prepared. And, you know, I'm not one for surprises as much as I enjoy it. For me, I'm conservatively, let's just methodically get it to the best place we can.
Yeah, so go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, in the meantime, we've got to stay very close to the market. We're engaging with fuel buyers so that we can respond rapidly to those price movements. And our experiences, as what we had in the previous cycle, and Sashi Davies, our colleague based in France, she's been in the industry now for three, this will be the fourth cycle, is you layer in market-related contracts into a rising market. So you really get to seize upon the upside of the price spike. And we think those price spikes typically happen at the beginning of a cycle, before you get all these other higher cost projects coming in. It happens then. So we seize upon that. And that's the key difference and where restart projects stand out. Why we feel quite buoyed by it.
You are very methodical in the way that you're working with this project and making sure that investors, or I guess shareholders, are being looked after. But for those people that are watching, this is an investor audience. I'd love you to just maybe give us three reasons why now, because we're running out of time, why now is a good time to put their hard-earned dollars into Boss Energy.
Thank you. If I could sum it up, I think when you look at uranium, it's a really sensitive commodity, and fuel buyers and utilities want to know where that resource is coming from. The expression cradle to grave is so apt for uranium. So one needs to sit back and think, where are the proven projects? What jurisdictions are they located? Do they have an experienced management team to operate? You know, where is that supply going to come from? And that's where we are just so well positioned. We're in such a safe jurisdiction. We've got the talent, the human capital. We've got a restart project that's already proven, it's already produced, and we've made these significant technical advancements. So that's what I would be looking at for an investor. You've got full upside and you've got low risk.
Okay, I'm going to ask one final question. Your share price has had a very good run in the last week. I think the last time I looked, it was 22, 23 cents. Do you think that you're fully valued at this time?
No, I don't. No, not at all. I think that the NPV that we've got in our feasibility study and the physical inventory that we have justifies nearly what where we are now on a valuation basis. But the expectation is that prices can run a lot harder going forward, and it goes back to, where's that supply going to come from? And that overshoot in price in those initial years is that first mover advantage that we can sort of latch onto. So, yeah, I'm really excited for the future. And, you know, I think mindful too that we need to create a sustainable mine, and that barrier to entry is a lot easier than barrier to exit.
I love that. What a great way to finish. Barrier to entry, barrier to exit. We're going to finish it up, but you've got plenty of news flow, ladies and gentlemen. Boss Energy are going to have lots of news between now and the end of the year, so keep an eye on this space. Make sure you check out our updates on small caps. Duncan Crabe, thank you, Managing Director and CEO of Boss Energy. Thanks so much for joining me on Small Caps today.
Thanks so much, Kerry. Thank you.